How do we, and do we, get rid of the following three words? And they're three words that come up 9 out of 10 times. Return to form. Every time I read that about this record, or about any band, but particularly in this particular case, do we care about getting rid of that? Because it's kind of like, this is not a return to form.
I agree with you, but I don't care to get rid of that at all. I think that you get, you know, the media, if they have a soundbite that is a positive spin on our band, then I'll take it. Because I think soundbites are infectious, and one person will have some sort of, you know, glib assessment of a record, and it can be swinging towards the negative or swinging towards the positive. And in either case, it's sort of going to be hyper-simplistic and sort of not quite right. But if it's swinging positive, then I'll take it totally.
So as over the years, have you even paid attention to any of this?
Not for a long time, no. But that's what I'm saying is kind of, I don't put a lot of weight into the meaning of those kinds of assessments. So that's why it doesn't bother me. I don't necessarily think it's a return to form, but I.
But it's irrelevant in the long run because the music provides and the band provides. So
sure, but it's also, you know, I don't know if the press is always like all that. If it's a good angle, I'll take it. I haven't read reviews in a long time. They are distracting and very negative to me, and I, you know, they bother me for long periods of time. So it's been since like 06 since I've read a review.
So one of the things that I did read, however, that you've talked about, Alan Moulder, you know, bringing him back was a really smart thing. But I believe the words you used is you said to him this time, go to town.
Oh, I can be very specific about that.
I'll bet you can. So go ahead.
It was not like, you know, go the extra mile, buddy. We know you have it in you. It wasn't that at all. What it was that I wasn't there micromanaging his process of my vocal. And so what he had done, and I stated this to him. I said, what you did on our last endeavor, every time you do your little delay bounces or your reverb effects on my vocal, you're always right. It's always awesome. And so my only instruction to you on this record is do your thing. Go to town with all those delay bounces and reverbs. And you don't have to ask me if I'm comfortable with you doing some kind of weird thing that comes back in the mix in the left channel. Do it. I love all your instincts in the affecting of my vocal specifically. He did on like Twice as Hard, the last song on the record, there's a really pronounced vocal effect. And that was one that defied all the other kind of things that he was trying on that record. And it's really heavily affected. And he did send to me when we sent out that first rough mix. He's like, you know, what do you think about this like heavy handed vocal effect? And kind of that was my attitude on this record, was do your thing. So I felt like if you feel like that's expressive and cool, then let's do it. And I don't even hear it now. I just am in the mood of the song.
The human voice is bass. That was kind of the discovery, right? Post-Carlos, is that it wasn't about replacing a bass player. It was about keeping the concept of bass in the songs.
The electric bass is a really key thing in the tradition of Interpol sound.
Right.
And so we weren't about to just make a record where there was no bass guitar, that it would just be done on keyboards.
Yeah, you can't do that.
And
yeah,
we weren't going to do it where it was like just root notes, because then it wouldn't sound like Interpol. You know, like the bass line has to be sort of busy and prominent and in the mix and contributing melodically. I think what you mean about like the vocal thing is that I respond to the bass when I sing.
Because of your voice.
Because of that, it sort of is the melody that I follow. It's just sort of, that's the thing I think vocalists often ride. And so I noticed that I knew I did this back in the day when Carlos was in the band. When we started writing this record without Carlos, I tried first with a guitar and then realized I don't have any vocal ideas. So let me pick up the bass and explore Daniel's chord progressions with that instrument. And then immediately I could sing along to the bass and had ideas. So it just sort of, that's how it came to be. But I don't know if, we didn't reinterpret what bass should be in our band.
And the other thing that I've heard said is that even though you have someone on tour with you, you're perfectly happy to be the Three Stooges.
Who knows what the future holds, right? So this record, it was very just organic. Daniel has a batch of songs. I met up with him. Either we do nothing for 3 days because I'm realizing I can't have ideas with just my guitar, or I'll bring a bass in and we'll go from there so that we have a productive 3 days. So that was why I got the bass. We didn't even have time to have a conversation of who do we know that we might, like, should we bring in Brad? Should we bring in any number of musicians that we work with to play bass? Or, you know, it's Monday and we've only got till Wednesday. Why don't I just bring a bass? And that's how it began. And then it stayed feeling good. So for this record, it felt good just as a three-piece, circle the wagons, kind of like see what we can come up with as like the core remaining members of Interpol. And it just worked out. I don't know what we'll do for the next outing. Maybe we will bring in someone else to play the bass.
And in terms of the record itself and the way it all flows, and I'm not talking sequencing, but it is a more aggressive record.
That's cool.
It does. I think it's a more aggressive record. I think it does rock harder. But the thing about Interpol and in the bastion of the world of bands, you've always just been Interpol.
To be honest, when you said the thing about true to form or return to form, there is some truth to that that I do believe in, which is that when we first were working on our first record with Carlos, we had a lot to prove as a band, and like we were in a pretty rock was our thing. As Carlos went evolving as a musician, he sort of moved towards more kind of like classical stuff and was sort of putting the bass guitar down and moving over to sort of symphonic arrangements. Right. And that was an influence in our band. Yep. And now you take that influence out of our band and maybe what you're left with is Daniel, who decides to write just straightforward rock songs because that's where he is right now. And then Sam and I are left and we're all about the fucking rock. So like, let's rock. And then you have, you know, less the input of someone who's kind of wants to make this more left field challenging kind of symphonic orchestration type music, which was great and which I think made our third and fourth records real progressions, was Carlos's input and like kind of expanding what we were doing. But there is a degree of return to form because we're eager again. We're eager to prove to ourselves that we can do it again because now we're three. We're eager to, you know, to just write like a really immediate, good, solid record. And then the remaining members are of a more, you know, like card carrying rock kind of like, yeah, let's make a rock record sort of attitude.
And the keyboards kind of fell back.
And
that was the definition of making it a rock record, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm a keyboard guy, but not the keyboards can't rock.
No, and they really can. Keyboards really can absolutely rock. But yeah, it was just like there was the three of us in the writing room and we had guitars and drums. So.